But if the solar, lunar, or quantum energies, we embody it as men and women with yes. our bodies and with the cellular dynamics, not the cultural biases. And this is where the lunar feminine and the solar feminine, the lunar male and the solar male have a possibility of taking what you're saying and going back to a creation story with consciousness and energy, have a chance to be birthed differently, as in the Navajo story where the twins come together. It's telling that story that makes all of us as humans and as a culture have a different possibility. To realize that it's the lunar masculine that has a chance for men as to really make the difference in search of the compassionate male and the compassionate person is a real gift. So the lunar leads, the solar executes. That's what the alchemists unconsciously did, most of the meeting of the conscious ego of all of us in the audience that will listen to this.
Welcome to another episode of In Search of the New Compassionate Male. I'm the producer, Dennis Tardon, and this is Clay Boykin, the founder of the movement. Hello, Clay.
Hey, Dennis. Well, I tell you, what an afternoon we've got lined up.
Isn't it the truth?
Yeah. Higher Teach is with us today, and we have just met. Howard has got a background in archetypal psychology, mythology, and neurology.
Oh, right. I love that.
We've got that.
Howard, and then we have our wonderful friend, Dana White, who has brought us Howard.
That's right. He has.
And Dana, you are joining us also. And our study of consciousness, Howard, and how this bundle of atoms and molecules coalesces together into a conscious form that is just absolutely stunning. And I love your work from the quantum level on up that is talking about how it happened and what's going on here. And so Clay has some direction of where he wants to take us in this.
I think we want to start class right now and dig in. And Howard, you've got a phrase or the term twin heroes.
Yes.
I'm curious where that came from and what you've done with that. And we'll start there and we see where we go.
Well, that's a big start. That was the turning point of my life. I had gone to graduate school and became a psychologist and I got interested in dreams right away. And there's nobody to study from my perspective other than Jung. And at the time, I lived in San Francisco. And
what years were these, Howard, so we can ground it in?
This was in the, can't even think, I was, 28, I got out of school. I'd say about 38, I was age 32, born in 1940, and I just turned 80. And so from 40, that point till my late 40s, I was deeply involved with some of the world's class Jungian analysts in the Bay Area. And a couple of them had been involved with Jung himself, particularly one named Joe Henderson, who's quite the famous dude up there, and studied with some of the masters, and was still in my late 40s. And because I had a very complicated background and was really lost, but studied Jung at the personal scholarly level and became fascinated for my own survival, not for intellectual stuff, but it required me to become an intellect, which I wasn't very smart. I was pretty depressed, stupid, grew up in the 50s in Los Angeles. And so all said and done, I'm in my late 40s and I'm still depressed and I couldn't figure out. And I knew there was no more an analyst for me to see at that point. And I'm in a very lonely place living in San Francisco, and I go to a movie called The Kiss of the Spider Woman, which I don't know whether very many people have heard of.
Yes.
Raul Julia and was a major star in it.
Yes.
William Hurt.
I saw the movie and I was struck by the end of the movie where the movie is about two men who were locked in a prison cell in South America. One was a revolutionary and the other was a very effeminate gay man. And they were thrown together in that prison cell. And it was an amazing story of their journey and their life. And they each died the other one's death. The gay guy died carrying the message of the political revolutionary. And the straight guy in the story died in a rowboat with a romantic fantasy because all he was interested in was the revolution. And all the other guy was in was romance and how do I meet a partner. And so I wondered at the end of the movie who, you know, what would have happened if they had known each other or those parts of themselves earlier in life. And would they have had a different ending? And it was unclear in the movie who Spider-Woman was.
Yeah.
And a Jungian analyst friend of mine had written a book about Navajo symbols of healing, Don Saunders. And I had never heard of Twin Heroes, but I remembered he had written about Twin Heroes. And so I started looking, and the first thing I came across was the first thing Joseph Campbell had ever written about where the two come to their father. Which was in 1943, about 5 years before Hero with a Thousand Faces, which is the book he is remembered about. Mm-hmm. And it's the story of a male initiate, a shaman, and the sand paintings that are taken for taking men into the journey of initiation into, it was still a ritual, it's the main male ritual. And it was about the sand paintings, and it's an amazing document about it, which, by the way, is on my website, if I can say.
Oh, please.
SolarLunar.com. Under the tab, it's under the tab of articles and then Twin Heroes, and it includes some of the sand paintings on it. So it's a very interesting thing for the first thing that Campbell had ever written. But at that point, I had never really heard of Twin Heroes, and I couldn't figure out, other than beginning to remember, Romulus killed Remus.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and people, if I say Twin Heroes, they usually think of Cain and Abel, but they weren't twins. And that was remarkable to me. And as I began to explore the Twin Heroes in different cultures, I was shocked to find every single pre-Judeo-Christian culture had been about twin heroes. And it was shocking to me. And Romulus kills Remus, and I figured, well, there's a part of the masculine that I certainly didn't have growing up as part of the masculine, because I was growing up with this other part like most of you were.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. It took me years to try to figure out what the twin heroes meant to me personally. And it was actually the Mayan myth, because I started trying to piece this together, and it was actually the Mayan myth of the twins that enlightened me to what is the moment that changed my life. Because in the Mayan story, and most of these are creation stories, so these are like creation archetypes. This is not just a culture's twist. So you start seeing this twin archetype in different cultures, and in the Hoopla-Voo, in their creation story, they played on the ball court, and they were dominant on the ball court because they lived, and they were bothering the Lords of Death. And so the Lords of Death got upset and called them down to the underworld, thinking, well, here's a couple of mortals that we'll just take care of, and they won't bother us anymore. Well, to the shock of everybody, or the shock of them, the twins actually defeated the Lord of Death and some of the underworld deities. And then they freaked out because they realized they were mortal. And they had not, they realized they couldn't keep living. So they jumped into a fire, and one was born as the sun, and one was born as the moon. And that was the moment of revolution for me in realizing that this twin male spirit that I've been finding everywhere, almost every culture I looked into, pre-Judeo-Christian cultures and indigenous cultures today, there was this lunar male hero And the Navajo world, it was Monster Slayer and Child Born of the Water. And that was like, oh my God, that's the male moon heroes called Child Born of the Water. And ever since that moment, my whole life has been dedicated to figuring out how to share this, learn about it. And it's been a very interesting journey to do that. But that's how I came across this twin male hero. And just another comment, you don't see twins in female mythology. You see dual pairs of, their myths are organized around mother and daughter and sister and sister. And that so that's a really one unique difference in mythology, archetypal mythology, is that particular configuration. And when I realized that this is a special way that men are there for a bunch of reasons, which I've written about and speculated on, I realized that this was the missing piece for me. And that's how I came across the twin heroes. And the last 30 or so years, that's what I've been exploring. What are the implications of it? And it just goes on and deeper and deeper.
So the lunar masculine, so there's lunar masculine and solar masculine.
Yeah.
There's lunar masculine and solar masculine.
Right.
Okay. All right.
And there's solar feminine and lunar feminine mythology.
Okay.
Exactly.
That is so startling. And I think the most important image of that that's seen is the god Isis. Because if you look her up, she's got a moon holding the sun on her head as her headpiece. So this archetype is in men and women. Mm-hmm. It comes across differently by culture, not by archetypal quantum energy.
Howard, when you realized this, did something begin to heal within you?
Did the process,
could you talk about that?
Sure. I began to have relationships with women, particularly, and that had been one of the missing things in my life, is trying to figure out my masculinity, and really had to redefine it. Because actually, to be blunt, there were a couple of suicides in my family. Mm. And that was like very shocking to me, actually just when I started graduate school. And so trying to figure out what it meant to be a man, that was the moment. I had done pretty well with men and women, but there was something that was missing and clicking. That wasn't clicking, and it was really this radical empathy, compassionate part of me that was not there as a man. Because in Jungian psychology, and still I discover with many of my clients today, if you're touching this part of yourself, you're touching the feminine side of a man. When I realized this has got nothing to do with the feminine, that this is a male archetype, that changed my life. And so many years later, I finally found in my 70s, actually, the woman I've been with for a long time, and I had great relationships. The thing that changed mostly was my ability to relate to men and women. It's a relationship archetype to bring these two twin aspects together as masculine. Then you can relate, whether you're gay or straight, it doesn't really matter. You can relate to that part of men and women in many new different ways.
So that's a refinement, Dennis, wow, of what we've been, our language has always been, well, you guys need to go into your heart, and a lot of the guys say, well, okay, you want me in my heart. That means I got to leave my head behind. Well, no, let's integrate that. But
that is so insightful, because it's the same thing. I hear many amazing men and women, these days talking about integrating the masculine and the feminine, which is really the binary world as opposed to the quantum world.
Yes.
And when I heard you guys talk on Dana's show, and particularly you, Clay, were talking about both and.
Yes.
Rather than either or. And the world is ripped apart right now by by the binary way of being, no question about it. And to realize that the lunar is the wave and the solar is the particle takes this to a whole different possibility of energy being the driver of a person, depending upon who they are, regardless of gender, and it being the solar lunar archetypes.
And depending upon what is observed, it'll collapse or continue on in its way, and which is the what I love about that is that even in the Judeo-Christian world, in the beginning of the Bible, they talk about, and he saw that it was, that to me is observation. Right. This is how when we observe it, it collapses into what. Which is makes me very careful about what I'm willing to observe.
Right. Well, it's the participation archetype is the thing that quantum physics is how you see it is how it turns out. And that's a label. And this is why it's so important. And I just give you a little personal thing. My last name is Teich. And you didn't actually, I don't usually, you didn't say it. And that, I felt that. I experienced that, and I wasn't going to bring this up, but because we're talking about labels.
Yes.
How something gets labeled depends on how it's solar.
Yes.
And so labels get up to be the thing that have to be freed up when appropriate to go into radical empathy, compassion.
Oh.
For men and women. And for me to change this thing from gender and to help the women I've worked with see this as solar lunar and not the masculine side of themselves and see this as the authentic archetypal wave and particle gives one a bunch of opportunities for a different kind of consciousness.
Well, that's now changed my vocabulary, Dennis.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. And how are that I love getting out of the binary state, because what I find is the binary state is what good, bad, right, wrong, yes, no, gets me out of that. What I can see is a continuum from 0 to 1 and finding myself somewhere along that continuum. And if I can move just the tiniest bit toward the one at one-ment, that wholeness, that just a tiny bit, now I'm moving something rather than having to be in that binary state.
That's where light comes in, because light is wave and particle. And since we're made of light, that when you move out of that binary state into this other consciousness, you're in the possibility of oneness, depending upon how you see things and how you process it and how you relate to other people.
Yes.
So really you've got to go to that level to integrate.
Move on.
To integrate solar and lunar, because in my mind I'm still sitting here and goes, well, it's not integrated. You got solar and you got lunar. You know, you got the sun and the moon. Those are two different things.
No.
But
not really, because the moon is powered by the reflections of the sun.
There you
and
go.
Moon energy is a lunar, child born of the water in the Navajo tradition, and it's reflective consciousness, which you don't see narcissists doing in the story. He looks in the water and sees his own ego.
Mm-hmm.
He does and dies in the narcissistic possession of the narcotic, because at that point it was not this pretty flower you buy at Safeways. It was actually a narcotic, and the root word for narcissism is narcos. It's just narcotic. And so people don't have this reflective consciousness as an agility to open up possibilities of sacrificing the ego at the moment of its organization to look into see the other in radical empathy, compassion.
Okay. So I don't want to jump ahead, so tell me if I'm jumping ahead.
Okay. I can't wait to see where you're going, because there are
you don't know where I'm going to go with this.
There are a million Howard Dana.
Wait.
Oh,
let me go there. I saw in the article or somewhere as I was studying before this, inflated solar ego. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, what else is there these days? I don't have to.
Yeah.
The patriarchal without the lunar as a value proposition is you take an archetype, solar or lunar, it could be almost any route. If you inflate one and kill the other, that's the inflation of the archetype. And the biggest danger is when you do that, you eliminate the axis between the soul, the self, and the ego. And once you're in that alienated solar-lunar split, self-ego split, whatever it is, good, bad, right, and wrong, once you're in binary thinking, you're in an inflation of one part where you're not seeing the both end. And okay. So to see the both end and see the inflated solar, or it can be the inflated lunar too. Mm-hmm. And when you for most addictions are an inflated lunar where that's always, you're caught in the lunar. You're not really having the symmetry of boundaries, because anybody that's done any personal work knows that if you have an addiction archetype, you can't have boundaries. So
exactly.
The energy and the boundaries working as an energy twin configuration and complementarity. That's the big, great word, is the complementary pairs rather than binary opposites.
My head's spinning. Okay.
I just love this. But anyway, oh, thank you. I am so glad.
The danger of inflation is I love the highs. Believe me, I've spent a good deal of my life. The problem with the highs is you have to deal with the lows.
Yeah.
Because eventually you get possessed by the other side from the unconscious. And the moment you're possessed, it is a hard road back. And so I try, when I feel that energy of inflation, to not make any decisions that day, but wait at least till the next day. Because usually when I wake up, if I haven't acted on it, I haven't materialized it. But acted on it, I'm in big trouble.
How do you not take action when you're right now, if
I can feel that inflation, I try, not fully successfully, but I try to wait until I wake up the next morning and sleep. Have some sleep.
And that Howard, where do you feel it? How do you feel it? Can you describe to me the...
I'm very intuitive, and I feel like the beginning of a high as opposed to a passion. So I just feel the energy of I'm too excited as opposed to being excited. It's that inflation of the too much, the black and whiteness of an archetype. And overly into the solar, talking about that language, and forgetting that there's a both and, a complementary pair in quantum physics, and trying to live in that complementary way is definitely a creative challenge in any culture, and definitely at this time of life. And that, to me, is the ultimate opportunity that we all have at this time, is to figure out the complementarity rather than the opposites, whether it's gender or race or any other tragedies that are going on, is to not be caught in the inflation or somebody else's inflation. And how do you deal with that personally and culturally?
Yeah. Well, okay, so I want to take a step further then. The inflated solar ego. My ego is pumped up and I'm rocking the world. But then you came back and you made a comment, something about low self-esteem when I've got an inflated ego.
That makes sense to me.
Well, explain it to me. I don't get it.
The inflation, I'm sure you've been down, and I'm sure you've been deeply down such as you've said. And that's the deflation that comes with the inflation, is the downer. And the problem with, you get possessed by the soul, the ego gets possessed by the solar, and the solar can only go on. So then it can be a long time. Mm-hmm. That can be decades, honestly. Some of these complexes take over. But you're eventually probably going to pay the price. And it's in that down period to not be in despair, depression, and lost. And so the less you're in the inflation of either archetype, the more chance you have to live in wholeness or symmetry, or in a different state of being. So,
okay.
You know, it's almost any time you're down, I see that as part of my archetypal inflation that's now having the other side.
So Dana,
one of the issues with inflation is that it's often a compensation. And so we're doing something for which we are experiencing a sustained deficiency. And it could be that we're not getting the kind of feedback we want in our life, or we're not materializing something, or we're getting attached to the material things that are coming through the sustained path of being involved in our inflation. Almost by nature, a ramped up ego is inflated, because the very nature of being involved in something for which there is material reification is giving us the kind of false sense of achievement that comes from attaching ourselves to the outcomes and goals of the material world, rather than that internal sense of self-fulfillment or what have you.
Howard, do you see a change in the world? It's so nice to have someone who is a peer of mine age-wise, so that we're in the same quadrant in our work. And do you have an optimism about what this global interconnected world is, and how these seeds, like being able to talk with you, that we're able to have, that is actually raising my consciousness and moving it higher? We were talking this morning about field theory and how are we raising the consciousness of humanity to a higher level of resonance?
It's a total paradox. We wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for the coronavirus. And that is a global issue, environmental issue, that still doesn't seem like many people understand that the environmental crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I think, and you know, so many other people that Dana and has brought together, and so many other people are getting a chance to connect, ironically, through technology.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than physically have to be places, we wouldn't be doing this unless we had all flown together. And I'm actually so optimistic. And to be on the show, to be honest with you, is, I think, going to be a changing moment in my life. And the work you're doing, which wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for the pandemic and the terror that, you know, no matter who you are, you're having to face this, and it's very unclear where it's going when you get past the ego hopes of what's going to happen when.
I love how you said that, Howard, because what Clay and I, what you and I have been talking about, and also Dana, is that we've never had a time that I can remember, certainly not in my lifetime, when there was so much uncertainty, when I can tell you that we do not know next month.
Yeah.
What is going to be like? Mm-hmm. We, with all this, all these predictions and forecasts and that, and people are saying, my crystal ball does not go more than 2 weeks. And it's an astonishing time, which has to be something that I can learn from, that we as the humanity can learn and use as a graceful opportunity.
You know, the paradox that nature has created this to ask people to deal with human nature and environmental nature in a different way. And that's the great opportunity. There's so many people that have been working on individual and consciousness that I know all my life. That's, you know, so many people since the 60s. But this is a weird paradoxical moment that we have a chance to, and better do something about it if it's going to go on in some new form other than all the dangers of, you know, that are going on that everybody's experiencing, and traumas that some people are experiencing or on the verge of a trauma.
Right.
What might happen next on so many different levels. So it's a weird paradox that, yes, I think all the work and all the hope of so many people that I know and is this chance to really get together now through technology, their whole personhood.
You know, as you were talking, Howard, I was reminded that I think it was in 1988, there was this guy named Tom Peters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he wrote the book Thriving on Chaos. And I'll never forget then in the preface of it, he said something to the effect of the winners of tomorrow will view chaos as a source of market advantage and not a problem to be got around.
Yeah.
Now, that's in the business world. And you think about it, it is. It's the great leveling. And so, okay. Away from the business side, back to this.
I don't know that there is a, I don't know, Clay, I agree with you. I'm not sure that there is a not business side, that it is all part of the integrated, this exchange.
Thank you.
These exchange of energies, this part of it. I think they're great lessons. I love your lessons from the business world, which, and all the work that you've done there that you brought to me.
Well, you're right. It is integrated. And I also want to go back to something that sparked from Dana when you were talking about the ego and the high, and then ultimately you're going to crash. My experience was being at the bottom, never being up here, but being at the bottom and then doing anything I could to come up and to get out of that, and then I'd crash. And I'd do anything I can. I'd have to go up a little bit higher. And there's that wave that gets worse and worse and worse. And so that was my experience. And I don't think I'm alone in that. It started out with on the low end versus the high.
Yeah, I'm, you know, when we would talk about back during the 60s and we would talk about drugs, and there would be people who would say, oh man, I want to do some Quaaludes because I really want, and those are the low notes. Those are the nouns. I always went, no, I want to ride that big magic mountain one. I want to go over there. Let me do that one.
You're another generation, Dennis.
Can I make a comment on, so I met Dana, who runs the Miss Salon with Will, and Dana is an amazing person and an amazing writer, and it's so ironic. I'd say my shadow is writing, and that I've hired amazing people to help me, and Dana and I birthed a project that was enlightening for me. It got called Cosmic Humanity, and he reminded me when he sent a copy to you today.
Yes.
We originally visioned this as visually a VR project. And
virtual reality.
Yeah. Because I know that's the future of a part of technology. But, of course, we didn't have the money. But anyway, we did this project called Cosmic Humanity, which looks at what I came up with Dana's help of the word two-ness. And we went back to the Big Bang and the light as a two-ness, and life as a two-ness rather than opposites. And once you start holding this as two-ness and see, as we did in this project, the magnitude how this archetype shows up of light, which is a two-ness, at all the different stages of the cosmic evolution, it's still shocking to me. To do that. And Dana, who's just a magnificent writer, helped me do my part to write this in a way that makes sense. And so, you know, we ran out of funds and Dana went off on a trip, and I'm hoping eventually we can get back to this and actually turn it into a VR project, which would be an amazing experience that would, I think, have a powerful effect on in a way that nothing has been able to yet.
I would love to participate in that, because as I've the studies that I've been doing about artificial intelligence and virtual reality and the work that we're doing is that we're watching, I mean, Moore's law is so passé. We are heading faster than we've gone. I mean, machines are learning.
Yeah.
They're already learning. I'm not so sure that the Wikipedia is not conscious.
Right.
It's being fed. Yeah. It's being taken care of. It's being worked up. I might not recognize it as conscious. I might not have the ability to conceive of it as conscious, but my sense is that conscious it has a consciousness.
Let me comment on that. This is so exciting for me. I brought this up consciously, hoping that this group and your listeners can see the projects around cosmic humanity. But it reminds me of one of the last sand paintings in the Navajo initiation after the twins had been initiated, where they left the earth as humans, went up to the archetype of the sky, and they each went through the initiation of learning about the four elements. And they weren't in the story, they weren't named. They were just dots in the sand paintings. But after they got initiated and passed the earth, air, water, and fire test, they got named. And that's when they got the name Monster Slayer and Childborn of the Water, that Tunis. Then they come back down to Earth because they originally went up there, left the house of Spider-Woman to come up there because they knew their destiny was bigger. They go up there and they find out who they are, but they have to come back. And the reason they went up there is the monster was devouring the community. The coronavirus at that time, or I labeled it the narcissism, was devouring the psyche and the world, the inflation of the solar ego and the lack of lunar, born of the water, reflective consciousness. Well, they come down to the earth, and they go through a bunch of tests, and of course they defeat the monster. And then they get inflated and killing greedy, and they start killing, not out of a higher purpose, but then they get exhausted and they're about ready to die. And as they're ready to die, the mother's uncle in the matriarchal tradition, which Navajos are, comes down and says, look, you can come back alive. And your job, if I bring you back to life, this is the uncle or the male spirit, at the archetypal form, it's your job to come back and teach people what you learned on this journey. Mm. And yes, the solar lunar is really the birth archetype of the cosmos. I'd like to put out that that's what we're doing here, is that this group plus others have a chance to come back and teach this in a way that would turn a creation story that hasn't happened yet with human consciousness at the forefront rather than be at the end of a cycle. And so I so appreciate this opportunity to talk with all of you and for Dana to be here because this is about Tunis twinning and creating a new story for the masculine as well as contributing to what, as I saw on one of your podcasts, you had a woman who already has the solar feminine as part of her language. And
yes.
That's rare. And I was shocked to see that because
Isn't that wonderful?
I know many of the women leaders and this languaging of labeling, which is really determines a lot, to hear the solar lunar be a possibility as part of your podcast at this point, this is a womb.
Well, you know, Howard,
possibilities that's unlike anything I've ever experienced.
Yeah. I was going to say something, but I think Dana, you had something that you wanted to
go ahead.
When you spoke earlier, Howard, about how virtual reality was really something that could awaken the way in which our consciousness could unite with the technological world that we have found ourselves in.
Right.
When we look at technology. It's doing all of the, it's exhibiting all of the behaviors of a life form.
Right.
It sustains itself. It is nourishing itself from its inputs, and it gives us outputs that in a sense express its own separation, its own autonomy, its own reflections, if you will, of the human condition. And there have been several films that have come out that really are useful in terms of understanding the shadow side of what it is that we have created in creating technology. A brilliant one by Werner Herzog called Lo and Behold talks about the evolution of the internet into a life form of technological consciousness, where computers dream. They have become so fluent in outthinking human input that we serve them rather than them serving us. And it's useful for us to imagine or reimagine our role in existence.
Right on.
Because if we were able to adopt a servant role, a servant model of participation, then we would transform the ego's relation to the rest of the archetypes that make up consciousness.
Yep.
Yes.
So, you know, virtual reality, we create a virtual reality by our being, our quantum world. There is no, quote, objective reality and the participation effect. So to take that technology, which is only at the beginnings of the beginning or in other technologies, and find a way to embrace it in that beautiful thing you just said, Dana, that is world-changing excited.
I feel that the only limitations that we have in terms of our consciousness and participation are the limitations that we imagine ourselves. Because the reality that we are in is so contextualized that we can see it through our manners of engagement. And when we flow into our own behavior and we then take our behavior as the fuel and not the outcome of what our involvement is, we can sustain ourselves. We can achieve outcomes because we're not attached to the outcome.
Right.
We're serving the outcome. The outcome becomes something that is pulling us along rather than we pushing ourselves ahead through the ego's fuel lines.
I'm so glad that you said that, because what I find over and over again, that if I push toward an outcome, if I push toward an outcome, it's always lower than if I stay in the footwork. It always is higher than I could have imagined. My imagination isn't big enough to imagine you, Howard, you, Dana, you, Clay. I would have sold short, way short, had I not stayed in the footwork and said, okay, I'm going to do the next thing and watch it unfold in front of me. The footwork, my job. The results, not my job.
Yeah.
Actually, the attachment that creates the addiction, that keeps it from the quantum flow, the solar lunar flow. And, you know, as they say in Buddhism, attachment equals suffering. Nothing greater than that. And to have that ability to let go and sacrifice the ego attachment, that is the hardest and the best opportunity to take what you're saying, Dana, and begin to keep doing that as a collective and as individuals and joining together in a possibility of a collective evolution.
To that point, I go back, what just popped in my head just a minute ago is Dennis was talking, and what you were saying, Howard. Viktor Frankl talks about, you know, don't aim at success, because if you aim at success, you're going to miss. You've got to aim higher. and is perhaps aiming higher is turning loose of the outcome.
Exactly. That's where I do a lot of business consulting, and to ask somebody to let go of outcome. Yeah. However, if you see it holistically, the outcome's a smaller version of what's possible. Necessary for
beautifully said
an agreement, making a difference between an agreement and an attachment to get teams to agree to something, yeah. But see that there's more than that. That gives a bunch of possibilities for different kinds of dynamics.
Boy, that goes back to the servant leadership model.
That is just wonderful.
And the first one is, you know, create an inspired vision.
Yeah. Exactly.
That everybody can agree
so,
on.
See, the vision that comes from the imagination
yes.
and the lunar. It's the solar which creates, you know, in a certain way, the lunar, but it's asking us to move past the attachment.
You said somewhere in there, I picked up in the article, or maybe it was an interview that I was listening to, Howard, the lunar leads and the solar executes.
This is so deep. So, if you study Jung, one of the greatest gifts of Jung is alchemy. At the level that is not the New Age version of alchemy, but the archetypal version. And what Jung came across was that the alchemists, which probably go back to the use of fire, but certainly started manifesting more consciously. You can see it in the Egyptian mythology and from that particular era. That's when alchemy technically started, and what Jung realized ultimately was that what alchemy was the evolution of the psyche. And to realize that there was a prefiguration of his work, and that it really came from alchemy was the real turning point for him in understanding alchemy at this amazing level. And one of the secrets of alchemy is the lunar leads, the solar executes.
I want that to sink in because...
The lunar leads, intuition, imagination, vision leads, and the solar executes. We've gotten caught in the execution addiction.
Mm.
Not in the twinning or the two-ness that keeps it accomplishing something, which is usually creates a dominator and a whole culture, a colonialism of the mind and of the world. And to get out of it when it builds at a certain level is a big thing that's going on right now that can't be stopped. But the new birth of this lunar lead solar executes consciousness, that is going to, I think, be one of the more important things. And I, you know, Jung understanding alchemy, this amazing part of his work, and I won't go on and on about the insight that the big revolution, I'll say the last thing he ever wrote was called Mysterium Conjunctionis, the mystery of the union of opposites. And in that there were the previous volume had very much many pictures, and the last volume only had a few, and it's two men in one body with two heads and two legs. And and underneath one of those was called the hidden to be revealed. And I figure, wow, if the alchemists had a hidden secret, I mean, even amongst themselves, the hidden to be revealed, what would it be? Well, in the pictures, through mechanism of coloring them in because they were printed in black and white, the ends up to be the lunar masculine was the hidden to be revealed in alchemy. Now, since most of the alchemists recorded are male, this was a big insight when I saw the color blue. Child born of the water kept seeing this blue as the energy, the water, the ocean, as the hidden of male alchemy. And if this is so deep here for me to be able to talk about this in 1 hour or whatever with all these, that to realize that it's the lunar masculine that has a chance for men as to really make the difference in search of the compassionate male and the compassionate person is a real gift. So the lunar leads, the solar executes. That's what the alchemists unconsciously did. Most of them, they didn't have the conscious ego of all of us in the audience that will listen to this. But to take that and keep learning what that implies is revolutionary.
It's golden.
Isn't it beautiful? And Howard, what it feels like, if I understand this correctly, and Clay helped me with this, is that another way of saying in search of the new compassionate male is in search of the lunar masculine in each of us.
You're so tuned in because that's what I was mentioning to Clay before we got on. Mm-hmm. And if I can give Clay some amazing acknowledgement, if he had said the word golden a moment ago, that's what the alchemists were about. Mm-hmm. It's turning this into gold.
Yeah.
And that is, this is a real alchemy discussion that we're having here. And finding this part of the masculine and having it be the resource is the alchemy of creation, not destruction, which is what the masculine has been leading force in doing for thousands and thousands of years now. Only and creation. You can't defeat the lunar. You can't defeat, as Dana so well put it, the imagination. You know that. Even Einstein talked about the imagination as a thing that gave him. So, but that's so forgotten when you get caught in an endpoint.
You know, to that point, how many times have you seen me say that, you know, we're pushing this down. The patriarchy has us pushing this energy down, and it's like holding a basketball underwater. You can only do it so long. And you're right. It's not going to go away, and it's going to come out. And it's either going to come out in a good way or it's going to come out in not so good way, you know. Hit me health-wise years ago, you know, almost cost me my life.
But it's going to come.
It's going to come out. That's right.
It cannot be denied. The lunar masculine cannot be denied. I love when Einstein said that I did not arrive at my understanding of the universe through my rational mind.
This is where we're all in Einstein. Is the end through the lunar.
Yeah.
Yes, I get that now. I understand. Howard, this is... Dana, God bless your heart.
Yes, yes, yes.
May I say something here at the end, Clay? I want to say to Howard and to Dana. Howard, this is... Dana, God bless your heart. for these connections, I mean, because I see you, Dana, as one of the primal connectors of the world.
Absolutely.
Not only do you do your own creative process and do your own extraordinary writing and the work, but in addition to that, you're one of the most generous people I've ever met that says, I need you to connect with you, to connect with you, and I want to bring because there is something here for all of us in the work that you're doing. And you brought us Howard Yu today.
Yeah.
Holy smoke. It's holy smoke.
I was going to say, in being graciously invited in this and responding to your words, Dennis, the people that I feel that I have created as affiliations in my world are simply a reflection of this path of servant ownership. Mm-hmm. They give themselves over through what they're doing as a path of service to some greater good, something that is beyond themselves, that is looking to materialize or express itself out in the world through their ideas, through their contributions, and what have you. One of the talks that I gave some time ago had to do how we evolve out of this condition that the anthropologists have called participation mystique. And we come into consciousness where we've been for thousands and thousands of years, and human consciousness has believed in itself. And now we're returning to the quantum oneness, the united participation mystique at the other end. We are noting through the laws of physics that we're interconnected, and this coronavirus has really drove that point home. This is really a world that is deeply implicated in a unified, non-dualistic, non-binary sense of existence. And the sooner we come to understand that, the less hold we think we have over it and the less hold it has over us. So as we flow into the future, which we're destined to do, we can either try to hold on to it or we can let ourselves go and just be there with it. The symbol of the Tao has the male and the female united in each other. It's a dual system of two-ness. So you have the male with a female in it, and you have the female with the male in it. And this is the way in which non-dualism or non-binary or oneness would be expressed, because two-ness is inherent in oneness. There's the male and the female that are part of whatever that is. It's only human mind that sees the separations. The separations don't exist anywhere.
If I could comment, before the Tao got labeled male and female, it was sun and moon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's the politicalization of the Tao that has been labeled that way. When I look at the Tao as men being solar lunar and women being solar lunar,
yeah,
not as the male and the female and the female and the male.
One of the things, Howard, that I feel so grateful for in this is because I cannot, when I use the solar and lunar metaphors and use that in my consciousness, I cannot get there through my intellect.
Mm-mm.
There aren't words to be put to it. And so it
is so deep. If I could make one other comment, I know we're coming to an end here.
Keep going.
We're talking about the twin archetype. Now take a look at who's here. Two pairs of twins. And in Jung's amazing work, when he came out of the chaos of this period, he realized that the archetype of four, where the quaternity was the mandala. And to realize, since this is about men talking about men and hopefully not the bias of gender only, that it's this quaternity archetype that comes together, because what I noticed when I was doing all this amazing work in corporations, usually there were two men that in the male version that were running it. Usually one got seen and the other one didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go on and on to all the, you know, Gates and Ballmer and Steve Jobs and Wozniak and on and on. And you see this twin male archetype. And the power of the twinning is what brought the four of us together via the relationship archetype, which Dana is a master of. So, and looking at just the organic nature of what it is that we're talking about today, it's represented by individuals and the collective, because honestly, from the twinning archetype that brought us all together, because the four of us would not have found a way to meet if we had not twinned unconsciously. Mm-hmm. To consciously twin, that's the art that I think has the possibilities. That because you've never, it's either been patriarch or matriarch. There's not been a culture of pureness yet. And to realize that this archetype underneath is really solar, lunar, the Tao, without the gender labels, but within each gender being holistic by who you are, understanding the solar, lunar, it just opens up, I think, a discussion that's frankly never, I've never had before. And I've tried to talk about this for 30 years with people. And this is, to give you guys all credit, this is the deepest discussion I've ever had. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. I'm not being inflated here.
Well, it's so funny because before we started, Clay was texting me, well, we can talk about this. We can talk about it. I said, so what are we going to do for the next 12 hours? Because my intuition was so strong that we would be here at the beginning and that we would go. I agree, Howard. I'm Dana. Bless all of you guys for what all you have done to bring you to this spot today, so that we could open this discussion. And my only and most fervent wish is that we do it again.
Absolutely.
No question.
Thank you, everyone. And thank you for listening today. And we'll see you next time on In Search of the New Compassionate Male. See?